everyone. It's the end of the day, so everyone should, hopefully they stretched, got their sugar from the cookies that are out there and the soda. Thank you to the hotel for that. So we have about an hour of scheduled time to do Section K. I don't think it's going to take me that long. And then we're going to go right into Section P. And then as soon as we're done with that, then I guess we'll go into the question and answers. And the goal is, when I teach, is always to get people out a little early. And I do that for a reason. And I do that for a reason, because, man, have I spent many a time in your seat. And this is hard. This has been a hard day. I mean, it's a lot of great information, but who feels brain dead about now? Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. All right. So we are going to, hopefully we'll go through this information. You'll get what you need so that I'll try to give you tips and ideas about questions that we've gotten and clarifications that we've made and some, maybe some strategies when you're going back to teach this, because in fact, what is today but a train the trainer, or week, I shouldn't say just day, but week. So always remember, certainly you're trying to get the knowledge in your head, but you want to say, how am I going to teach this when I go back to wherever home is or wherever you work or wherever you're expected to train? So think about it from all of those levels. So Section K, and this is swallowing and nutritional status. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to describe how to conduct the assessment. We're going to learn how to calculate weight changes and gains and loss. And we're going to know at the end of this section how we're going to code Section K correctly. So for each one of the sections, you're going to find similar objectives for us. So what are we doing here? So Section K is intended to assess the conditions that could affect the resident's ability to maintain adequate nutrition and hydration. And that's very similar. That's been the main idea behind Section K when we were coding MDS-2O. But you'll notice that as we go through this, you're going to notice that it's changed a little bit. So we're going to cover a few sections here. We're going to look at the swallowing disorders. We're going to certainly look at height and weight and what we did to finally fix that, right, make it make sense. We're going to talk about some weight changes, and then we're going to talk about some nutritional approaches. And as it should be known, we have to make sure that we collaborate with all of the other caregivers who may have some knowledge and understanding or impact the resident's nutritional status, including our dietitians, any of the dietary staff, certainly the nursing staff on the units, and please do not forget our ever-important nursing assistants. So let's look at K0100. This is the item that's looking at the swallowing disorder. And here we're looking at the ability to swallow safely, and it can be affected by many diseases, processes, and functional decline. And I think all of us that are clinicians here will, and certainly have spent any time in the nursing home industry, will be able to attest to that. And alterations in the ability to swallow can certainly result in choking and the ever-important aspiration risk, which can be critically important and certainly for many of our residents can ultimately end up to leading to certainly morbidity and mortality. It can increase the resident's risk for malnutrition, dehydration, and certainly the aspiration pneumonia, and I think we all would agree on that. When we're going to answer K0100, we're starting to do the assessment, we want to ask, first and foremost, if you learn one thing about MDS-3O, it should be, please don't ignore the resident, right? So what should we do first? We should talk to the resident. Tell me, how's things going? You know, do you having any trouble swallowing? Do you having any issues chewing? Do you have any pain? Does it hurt when you chew? Does it hurt when you swallow? Do you find it difficult? Are you coughing? There's all kinds of general questions that we can ask our residents. So make sure, first and foremost, that we're actually asking our residents. And we're going to be doing this with an eye to what? A look-back period. And what's the look-back period for this? It is 7 days. Okay. Remember with MDS-3O, it's 7 days unless otherwise stated. So when we are looking at these items, we are going to be looking at the resident, if they're losing the loss of liquid or solid food from their mouth when they are eating or drinking. Are they holding food or pocketing food in their mouth, in their cheeks? Are they having coughing or choking during meals or when swallowing medications? And are there complaints of difficulty or pain with swallowing? So we've talked to the resident, we're certainly going to talk to caregivers, and we should do a casual observation. How is the resident doing? So if you get in there and you can get into the dining room or wherever they're eating and take a look. And make sure you're talking to staff across all shifts. Why is that important? Has anyone ever in their career had someone who presents one way at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning and a differently at 7:30 in the afternoon? Right, it's not a rare occasion, right? It happens more often than not. But our residents can be very different for their evening meal or their evening med pass than they would be after they've had a full night's sleep and they're fresh and whatnot. So make sure that we're not just capturing what's happening during our little piece of time. We want to make sure that we're really getting a sense what's happening to this resident over a 24-hour period of time, 7 days a week during that look-back period. So we can do a variety of things. And some of these slides are kind of similar as we go through the various sections, but we're going to look at the medical record. Do we have any nursing notes during this time period that reflect that the resident was coughing or having difficulty with their food? Are there any physician notes? Are there dietitian notes that relate to that? Is the person on speech and language therapy services, and what does the speech pathologist have to say? What is he or she seeing for this particular resident? Do they have a dental history or problems? So if you've done, and we're going to talk about that, I'm actually going to be teaching that section also, but when you've done, an oral assessment, does this person have you, okay, here's another one. Have you ever met the person when you're talking to them? They're talking and their teeth are going one way. Guess what? That could be a problem, right? And does that ever, that happens fairly frequently, right? For people who have dentures, just a 10-pound weight loss in and itself can, not ultimately will, but can affect the fit of their dentures. So if you're talking to someone and they're saying, no, I don't have any problems, and all you can concentrate is the teeth going up and down, then we probably want to get a dental consult and see whether we can, do we use any kind of a poly grip or whatever they want to use, but do they need those dentures realigned or whatnot? But if we're looking at them, if they have dental problems, so poor-fitting dentures, do they have dental caries? Do they have a cavity? Do they have a fractured tooth that cold or hot bothers them? Do they have an abscess or the starting of an irritation? So we need to be in tune to that, especially that person who's cognitively impaired and who may not be able to clearly say to us, hey, I have a toothache. Often what happens is we don't find out that there's an issue until what? Their jaw is like this, right? They have, a huge abscess. And if you've ever had a toothache, you know how hard it is to eat or chew or do anything on that side. Looking for mouth sores. So if someone has oral thrush, it's amazing how many times when we talk about critical thinking and we're looking at assessing our residents, well, if they've had a decrease in PO intake and whatnot, you're looking at them and you can't figure out anything else that's going on, what else should you do? Make sure you look in their mouth. Could they have an oral thrush? Could they have multiple, canker sores going on? Have you ever had a canker sore? Yeah, and if you've got a bunch of them, the sores in the mouth, what's going on? If they have, if they just went through a major, issue and they had fever and they really weren't taking in as much PO as they should have and their mucous membranes got all dried out, this can be an issue for the person too. Certainly we want to look for if there's any obvious tumors or growths going on in the mouth, and do they have pain with food consumption or any issues like that. And then the person who's edentulous, meaning they have no teeth. Now I knew a lady who had no teeth and she had no teeth for 30 years prior to coming to nursing home. She could chew a steak better than I could. So the fact that she had no teeth for her was not an issue. She didn't want dentures. She said if she wanted them, she would have gotten them. She's happy. She has no pain. And she can eat just fine. So we need to certainly look at our residents and see. So we don't want to run to any, make any assumptions. We certainly need to look at the resident as an individual. When we're coding K100, code a symptom even if it occurred only once in the look-back period. So it doesn't need to be something that's happening on a daily basis, or it needs to happen three or more times, or anything like that. Even if they had one episode during that seven-day look-back period, then you want to go ahead and code it here. The second major portion, comment here is we do not want to code a swallowing problem, even if the intervention has been successful in treating the problem. So if someone used to cough with thin liquids, and now we give them nectar-thick liquids, and they're fine. They have no coughing, no issues. They meet none of the criteria for K100. We're not going to code the swallowing problem. And a lot of people are having difficulty with this. We're getting some questions about this. And it's that whole idea like pain, where people wanted to, on the MDS-20, they wanted to code pain because the person's on a really good pain regime, so they didn't have pain during the time, look-back period. So they're like, well, listen, if I held it back from them, they'd have horrible pain. So they wanted to code that the person had excruciating pain, because if they hadn't medicated them, they would have had that. Well, it's that same kind of theory. Here we've put an intervention in place. We certainly want a care plan for that intervention, and we want to make sure that it's communicated to all the staff and whatnot. It's not that it's not important, but for the MDS, we don't want to code it here. Because the things we're looking at for here are what? Potential problem identification. Areas that may be of concern to us and that we want to go ahead and work forward. Obviously, for someone where you have an intervention in place already, you have already identified that problem and put some interventions in place. Now you want to continue to make sure and monitor that the interventions that you've put in place are working well for that particular resident. So in this item, this is one of these, as they talked a little bit this morning about the coding matrix, and this is a check all that apply item. So you can check multiple items here, and so you would just go ahead, if they were holding food in their mouth or they had complaints of difficulty swallowing, we would go ahead and check each one of those items. And again, please make sure that you are keeping it to your seven-day look-back period from your assessment reference date. All right, K200, height and weight. Well, you know, there's a lot of slides here, and this is what I said to the group. I don't know that it's going to take quite an hour to do the section, although there's a lot of slides here. This has not changed a lot except for in one particular area, and we're going to go to that. So the importance of monitoring height and weight, we can look at diminished nutritional and hydration status, and it can lead to health and safety issues. It can lead to quality of life issues. And measuring weight, as we know, is one way of determining how someone is doing. And significant weight gains is as important to monitor as weight loss. And this came up in our April conference when we taught a similar group. And people, there was a lot of questions, or I should say comments, where people said, why are you only looking at weight loss? When here in the United States, weight gain is as big of an issue as weight loss is. And it's not that it's not important, but for right now, with the item set that we have, we are going to be coding weight loss, not weight gain. That does not mean that you should ignore someone who has a major weight issue and continues to gain weight. You should still assess them, work with the team, and care plan for them. So this is not everything, the end all and be all. What is it? It's the minimum, right? It's a minimum assessment. So please, people want us to like answer every question possible in every situation possible, and we can't do this unless you want to spend, you know, a week on every single resident. And even then, there'd be something that would be unique to one resident and not to another. So we're looking at minimal amount of data that we're collecting on these particular residents. But that does not relieve us of the responsibility to go ahead and care plan. So when we're looking at K200A, this is specifically looking at calculating the height. And we're going to measure and record the height in inches in on admission. And then we're going to measure the height consistently over time in accordance with facility policies and procedures, which should reflect current standards of practice. So what does that mean? Well, it came out when we were doing work on MDS 2.0. Jennifer started to say I did some work on the Dave 2, and actually I was part of the team and supervised all the nurses who were out validating the MDS. And so I was out across the United States and got a lot of really interesting questions, and people wanted to know, well, you know, how do we measure someone who's a bilateral amputee or who has birth defects or has this contraction? They had all kinds of questions. And so this got brought back, actually got formally put into question, and the CMS team, which Terry Mott and myself were part of under another contract, were answering all these questions. And we went round and round and round. I researched everything. One of my jobs was to research this whole thing on height. And I was like, wow, I never knew there were so many ways to measure someone. But there are. And so instead of dictating how you measure someone, all that CMS wants is for you as a facility or an organization to determine what is going to be your process that meets the current standard. There's like, I think, five or six different ways to measure height, and then apply it consistently within your organization. So that if I was going out, let's say this is 3 years from now, and I'm going to go out to your facility, I'm going to validate this MDS 3.0, one of the things I might ask you is, what is your policy on how you measure? And you should be able to show me what your policy is, and that staff are educated and consistently applying that same process. So when you're thinking about how do you operationalize MDS 3.0 in your facilities, here's a tip. Go back and look at that. And by the way, when we get to weight, it's going to be the same thing. How do we accommodate for the weight, and how do we make sure everyone's doing it consistently? All right. We can, when we're measuring the height, we should look at it consistently. We're going to check the medical record for subsequent assessments. If the last height recorded was more than 1 year ago, we should do another height on our resident. So if you have a height that was done, you know, 18 months ago, we really need to do another height on the resident. So again, how do you operationalize that? How do you make sure that happens for your long-term residents who are in your facilities greater than a year? All right, so here we go, 200A. Record the height in the nearest whole inches. That's nothing new. And now here is the new part. Finally, we're using mathematical rounding. Does everyone remember? You know, the problem is when we were out, the many folks were using mathematical rounding. But that's not what the manual told us to do, right? Right. What did the manual tell us to do? If we were 61.2 inches, what did we become? 62 inches, right? Which is fine. I don't think people minded being taller. It's when they added the pound that was the problem. So, but that being said, we're going to go back to how we were all taught in school to do rounding, so it makes more logical sense. So if you are doing a calculation, so someone is 62.5 inches, they would be recorded as 63 inches. And if they were 62.4, we would record them as 62 inches. Simple. I don't think it's going to be a major issue for anyone in any facility. So now let's talk a little bit about weighing our residents. So we're going to weigh the resident and record the results upon admission, and then for subsequent assessments. And we're going to go back, and we can look at the medical record. We're going to enter the weight taken within 30 days from the assessment reference date. We want to record the weight as close to the assessment reference date as possible. So if they had a couple of weights taken right near that 30 days prior, you want the closest to the 30 day to the ARD to use. And we can re-weigh the resident if it's greater than 30 days and the previous weight is not available. Certainly we can. That happens sometimes. I don't know if it would ever happen in any of your facilities that you'd have a missing weight. But if it ever did, we would have to re-weigh the resident. So some facilities may have that down pat. Most don't. But okay. All right. So record the most recent weight. If a resident weight was taken more than once during the preceding month, we take the most recent one and measure the weight consistently over time in accordance with facility policy and procedures and practice. This is probably the biggest thing. Who here has ever seen someone gain 20 pounds every time they get weighed? They either gain 20, lose 20. Yeah, I'd like to know what their gym routine is, huh? You know, I mean, it's crazy. If you ever, some of these great programs now, EMRs and stuff you have, and you start being able to graph out and someone's weight's like this. And yet, you look at the person, their clothes fit them exactly the same way that they've been fitting, they eat the same amount of food, there's nothing else going on with them. So what's the issue? Okay. Do we have any dietitians in the room? We have a couple. All right. So I can't even tell you how many dietitians have come up to me and said, can you fix this problem in this facility? You know, if I'm out doing some consulting and working in facilities. You know, and so it's figuring out a system and a process to consistently get your residents weighed the same way. So using the same scale, the same time of day. If you're weighing them with their artificial limbs, make sure they get weighed consistently with their artificial limbs. If they, you know, if you weigh them in a wheelchair and they normally have leg rests on, make sure they have the leg rests on. I know this sounds silly, but do you know how much rework and how much time is wasted? And how many people are put on, I mean, all kinds of stuff happens for something as simple as getting someone's weight. And then God forbid you're using the person's weight that you're weighing them daily, because this is a, you know, person with chronic congestive heart failure and we're basing treatment on it, right? What's important? 3 pounds is easy one way or another if you weigh someone after they've had breakfast compared to the day before when they just got up and you had them urinate and you weighed them. I mean, these are silly things, but these are systems and processes. So that's a little bit above and beyond the MDS, but when we talk about critical thinking, we talk about caring for our residents and looking for the best outcomes, and without chasing our tail, let's figure out how do we get this done and how do we get it done well. And big thing here is communication and systems and processes. All right. Use mathematical rounding, the same type of thing here. Instead of going 152.1 pounds and all of a sudden you become 153, here if they're 152.5, they go up to 153. If they're 152.4, they go to 152. Use the no information code if the resident cannot be weighed or if the resident's refusing to be weighed, and that sometimes happens. Now, I will tell you that there was asked in the April conference what the facility should do. If you'll notice on this item, I think we have the item set there, there are 3 squares. So one of the questions that came in and it was asked is, what do we do if we need a 4th square? That's a problem. If you have someone over 1,000 pounds in your facility, it's a problem. Could it happen? I guess. I'm here to tell you, I hope that doesn't happen, that you have someone over 1,000 pounds in your facility. God bless you if you do, and that you'll hopefully be able to take care of them. But for the MDS, you're going to have to put in 999 pounds. Because we've not put in 4 squares, and I don't know that we will put in 4 squares, but for right now, you have to max it out. All right? So that's the answer to that question. Okay, K0300. Now we're talking about weight loss. So weight loss can result in debility. It can adversely affect the health, the safety, the quality of life. And for persons with morbid obesity, a controlled and careful weight loss can improve mobility and health status, and we all know that. And for persons with large volume fluid overload, controlled and careful diuresis can improve health status. So we have those people who we've taken care of where they all of a sudden, you know, have put 10 or 11 pounds of water weight on. And man, they're usually very symptomatic at that point. And so controlled use of diuretics to drop that weight, not from weight, but water weight, and get that off so that hopefully we'll be relieving symptoms. So we should ask the residents and family or significant others about, you know, history of any issues with weight loss. Compare admission weights to previous weights. We can consult with the resident's physician if you have the opportunity to get a hold of their private practitioner in the community. Wouldn't that be wonderful? wonderful. And if that person actually had gone to their practitioner in any reasonable time before they came to you, if you could get a wait from them. Review transfer documents. Some of the hospitals now have, well, really they'll say, you know, we measured them on a bed scale or whatever scale they used, and they give you the exact weight. So hopefully you can have some level of confidence in that weight that they are providing to you. We are going to look at calculating the percentage of weight loss if admission weight is less than the previous weight, and we're going to do it at two time frames. We're looking at the 30-day and the 180-day, and that's not different than we've looked at in 2.0. So we'll compare the weight 30 days prior, and then we're going to calculate the percentage of weight loss if the weight is less, and we're going to compare the current weight to the weight at 180 days, and then we're going to calculate the percentage of weight loss for the resident. So what does K300 do here? It does not consider weight fluctuations outside of the two time frames, and that's been a big issue for people because, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the 7.5 in 3 months, and there's a real pushback to CMS to say, well, why aren't we looking at that? And maybe we will. I'm not going to speak for CMS at this point, but I think it's a valid thing to look at. But for right now, it's not there. It's not an item set. But that doesn't mean that we, as healthcare providers, shouldn't be looking at it and dealing with it. But for the MDS, again, you know, it's going back to the whole idea, this is a minimum set. It is not going to cover all scenarios, even though we want it to cover more scenarios. So in this situation, we're looking at the 30 days and we're looking at 180 days. But please don't put your head in the sand and ignore it, because the MDS doesn't force you to address the issue. Code weight loss based on whether it was planned and managed or unplanned and unmanaged. And we're going to look at the item set as we go on to talk about those issues. We're going to use mathematical rounding before any of our calculations. And here we go. If you ever wanted to know how to calculate a weight loss, here it is. This is self-explanatory. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it. But it walks you through the calculation. Some facilities have computer systems. They put it in. It calculates it for them. There are grids that can tell you calculating your weight loss. There's these nice little grids. So if you leave it on as a reference material right on your units, the nursing staff can look at it. And the dietitians are expert at doing these calculations for us. But you want to go ahead and say, do they meet the criteria? So here's how we do these calculations. And you can do this. This is one way, you know, example, 160 pounds times 0.90 equals 144. So a resident whose weight drops from 160 to 144 or less experienced a 10% or more weight loss. Depending on how you learned math, you may do the math differently. I wouldn't do it this way. I would do it differently. So it depends. It's not this is not the only way. This happens to be an example of one way to calculate it. So here's a little bit of a practice run for calculations. So Mrs. J has been on a physician-ordered, calorie-restricted diet for the past year. So there's some important words in this example. For this particular example, where it is on a physician-ordered, so where does that think, where would we find that information? In the order sheet somewhere, right? Physician-ordered, calorie-restricted diet for the past year, with the idea of weight loss. I'm going to restrict the person's calories in hope that they will drop some weight. Her current weight is 169 pounds, and then her weight 30 days ago was 172 pounds, and her weight 180 days ago was 192 pounds. So just quickly looking at that, has she been successful? Yeah, it's great. Big difference. Okay, does Mrs. J have a weight loss of 5% or more over the last 30 days? I'll give you a second. Do the calculations in your head. You want me to go back again? Okay. So here's the numbers. Here's the one. You're stretching your brain now, right? We got up and we stretched our legs. Stretch your brains a little bit. Okay. Well, okay, so we went back. So here's her numbers, right? So she weighs 169 now. 30 days ago, she was 172, so we look at the difference between, okay, and then at 180 days ago, she was 192 pounds. So the question here is, we're looking at the 30 day. So did she have a 5% weight loss or not? Okay. So let's see what we did here. Okay. So she didn't have that. So let's look at the next thing here. All right, so, and then what this next slide does is walks you through the calculation. Her current weight is 169. Her weight 30 days ago was 172. The 30-day 5% calculation equals 172 times 0.95. And her 5% weight loss point is 163.4. She does not weigh less than 163.4, so she doesn't have a 5% weight loss in the last 30 days. Does she have a 10% weight loss in 180 days? Okay. So she does have a 10% or more weight loss over the last 180 days. That makes sense, right? All right. But again, remember, if you're going back from the idea, you may understand how to do this very clearly, or it may always be your dietitian's job. But if you're going back and you're working with your nurses on the units, your LPNs, and whoever else is helping to fill out the MDS, maybe they never knew quite how to do this calculation, so you may have to teach this. So just make sure that you don't. I'm running over it a little bit here because of the. We're at the trainer level here, and you guys doing this for probably as many years as you've been doing it, you know these calculations. But think about if you're teaching someone new to MDS, because what I'm hearing is facilities are taking on brand new staff who never did MDS 2.0, and figure, well, we'll just teach them 3.0, and they're going to be our MDS coordinators. Okay, we need to support them, don't we? So hopefully, you know, you may be a mentor for someone who has this opportunity, because it's becoming harder and harder. I don't know, depending where you are in the United States, it's become harder and harder to get a really good MDS coordinator. Okay, you're becoming a premium commodity out there. So we're going to have to teach other people how to do this, never mind just the general staff. All right, so coding K300, we're going to determine by the percentage. So it's asking us the question, and it says, loss of 5% or more in the last 30 days or 10% in the last 180 days. So one of the questions that we got in via whatever method that came into us, people were saying, do you need to have both a 5% and a 10% weight loss to code this? No, it's an either or. So if you're looking at the 30-day time frame, you know, once you hit the 30-day, technically you don't have to do 180-day calculation, right? Because it's a yes answer at the 30-day. Don't even bother doing the math for the 180, because it doesn't matter. For this, it doesn't matter for coding the MDS, because it's a mutually exclusive question. It's not asking you to answer both, and they do not have to meet the criteria in both areas. So you would code 0, no, or unknown if the resident did not experience a defined weight loss or the prior weight is not available. Code 1, yes. So here's where we're going to say we have two yes answers. So yes, they had a weight loss, but they're on a physician-prescribed weight loss regime. Or code yes, not on a physician-prescribed weight loss regime. So all we're asking here and what they've kind of done in this part of the MDS is say, we acknowledge that certain people are going to lose weight because it's therapeutic. It's a good thing. And then there'll be these others who lose weight. It's kind of that unplanned weight loss, if we think about it that way. We really weren't planning it. We weren't expecting it. And hey, they lost the weight. So that's how this item is coded. K0500, nutritional approaches. Let me just catch up on my slides here. All right. So here we're looking at items for mechanically altered food and parental IVs and feeding tubes. And certainly these can diminish the individual's sense of dignity and self-worth, as well as the ultimate diminish of pleasure if they're on tube feed and they can't eat. It can be heartbreaking for some people. This is one resident in this nursing home where I go in and I do some work in. And they've tried and failed so many times to allow her to be able to eat even just pleasure foods. And she's from downtown. She goes, Ms. Ann, I just want to eat. I'm hungry. I want some cornbread. And, you know, and you do. All you want to do is give the woman something to eat. I mean, and, you know, she's maintaining her weight and all of those other things. So she's on weight loss. But that loss, because she's got enough cognitive ability, that this is just a terrible loss for her to be able to eat. And she truly aspirates every single time that she eats. And they've tried everything, and they can't get her off the tube feed. and the family has decided with her that this is the best thing that she have, the tube feed. So the resident's clinical condition may potentially benefit from various nutritional approaches, and it's important for the facility to work with the resident and the family members to establish what are those goals and to support them, and then integrate the resident's preferences with the overall clinical goals. So what is it that we want for this particular person? Do we know that they're going to aspirate, a certain percentage of their food, or they have a really high risk? We're going to do everything that we can, but one meal a day, we're going to give them some pleasure foods. And we negotiate with everyone, and we decide that that's the best plan of care for this particular resident. And that's fine, so we go ahead and we provide that care. So getting back to coding this particular item, we're going to review the medical record. We're going to determine if any of the listed nutritional approaches were received by the resident during the look-back period. And so we can say 500A is parental and IV feedings, and we're going to talk a little bit more about those. We are going to talk about feeding tubes. We're going to talk about mechanically altered diet, therapeutic diets, and then Z, which is none of the above. So nutritional approaches. Any and all nutritional hydrations received by the nursing home residents are included in this at the nursing home or at the hospital as an outpatient or as an inpatient. So here we're talking about, I think we're missing a slide here. Let me kind of preface this. This particular item, we're talking about K500A, and we are talking about the parental and IV feedings. So please note, this is where we're saying someone received IV fluids, and we're going to code them here if they were provided for nutritional and hydration needs. And it could be provided anywhere in this particular situation, as long as the resident, in any of the settings, but you need to know that the resident had it administered for the nutrition and hydration. They shouldn't be coded as, when we're looking at enteral feedings, they shouldn't be coded as mechanically altered diets. And they should be coded as therapeutic diets only if you're managing a problem. So if someone's getting high nitrogen formula, enteral feeding, or they're getting a low sugar type of feeding, they could be considered a therapeutic diet, even though it's an enteral feeding. So I'm sorry those were a little mixed up, those slides, as far as the flow of ideas. So let's kind of talk a little bit about the parental IVs. So IV fluids can include the following when there is supporting documentation that reflect the need for additional fluid intake, specifically addressing a nutrition or hydration needs. That which is underlined and bolded is the most important message that you can take home from this particular item today. So this is going to take some clinical judgment, and we're going to give some examples of that. And then your job is to make sure that the clinical record supports this information. So tell me, if I was the validator and I was going out to your facility and I wanted to say, well, I don't know, show me why you coded this particular item for nutrition and hydration. You and in your record, you should be able to show me where it's documented why this person needed this for additional nutrition and hydration reasons. So IV fluids or hyperalimentation, including total parental nutrition, administered continuously or intermittently. So if someone's getting TPN in your facility, no questions asked. I mean, that's what it's for. The harder thing is if they're getting half normal saline, they're getting a D5W, or things like that. IV fluids running at a KVO, or keep vein open rate. IV fluids contained in IV piggybacks. That's the biggest question. That's the one that everyone's struggling with. So when do I count someone who's getting 100 cc's of, let's say, normal saline in an IV piggyback every 6 hours? When would I count that? Under this, not the IV meds, but for nutrition and hydration. Well, I can count it if I can show that they need this additional fluid for nutrition and hydration. And again, we're going to go through a couple of examples. And then hypodermolysis and subcutaneous ports in hydration therapy. Any one of these, you can count them as long as you have the supportive documentation in your chart. Do not code IV medications here. There's another section to code this. Right? This is not IV medications. This is not where we're coding that. Do not code IV fluids administered as a routine part of an operative or diagnostic procedure or in a recovery room. So that routine, you know, they stick an IV in everyone before you have these procedures. We're not counting those. IV fluids administered solely as flushes. We're not counting those. And parenteral IV fluids administered in conjunction with chemotherapy or dialysis. We're not counting those. Do not code IV fluids administered solely for the purpose of preventing dehydration. I want to quantify or clarify this statement. And the second bullet we're actually going to remove. So there's been a lot of discussion about this particular item. If a resident, if again, your clinical assessment for the resident indicates that they need that extra, that example, that extra 400 cc's of fluid. If you've assessed the resident and you say, you know, based off of the fact, maybe, let me give you an example. They have a fever and they're only taking in 25% of their diet and they normally take in, you know, 15, 16, 1700 cc's of fluid, but they're feeling so crappy, we're only getting, you know, them to take in 400 or 500 cc's of fluid. Guess what? Would it make sense that that extra 400 cc's of fluid that with that IV piggyback over the 24-hour period is helping for their nutrition and hydration? Would you all agree with me on that? Okay. So that makes sense, right? Okay. The second scenario would be someone who comes to your facility who needs 6 weeks of IV antibiotics. They're alert, they're oriented, they're eating 100% of their diet, they're drinking fluids at will, they're easily taking in, you know, 18 or whatever, 100 cc's of fluids a day. They have no fever, they have no swallowing difficulties, there are no other issues going on with them except for they have an osteo and they need to have continued IV fluids. Let's say that same 400 cc's over the 24-hour period of time. Would you say that person has a clinical indication for nutrition and hydration, the need for that extra fluids? No. Okay. So there's a clinical judgment there, right? So when talking actually just today, this afternoon, with some folks at CMS, there was this one caveat that was left in the manual and is here in the slides that says you need to have an active diagnosis of dehydration before you can code 500A. Well, that kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? You may have some people who still are dehydrated, and that's going to go in, and that's fine. You go ahead and do that. But do we really want to get to the point of dehydration? No. Okay. So please clearly write on your slides or write yourself a note. The manual will be updated. We're working on the language that will take this requirement of this actual dehydration out, and it'll be left to clinical judgment. We'll give you some good examples. So your job as trainers and your job as folks in the facilities is you must figure out a way to make sure that your records reflect when someone really needs it. Why? Tell the story. Nursing notes are really a great place to do that. So just tell us the story and why you assess that these fluids would help the resident. The one thing that we don't want to have happen, and this happened in 2.0, where everyone wrote, there was some states, some organizations that were putting anyone, didn't matter who they were, who were getting any kind of IV, intermittent IVs for antibiotics, they were writing to prevent dehydration and then coding this item. And that is not what this is intended to do. So that's the message. CMS will monitor this item. We'll see how it goes. We're going to see if there's a, you know, relative to what we, our history that we have in this particular item, if all of a sudden a lot more people are coding it, then there might be some validation, more investigation, follow-up, who knows what's going to happen with it. So, but here, CMS is giving you some latitude, so take that latitude, use your clinical judgment, and document it. So make sure that that information gets back. And we will get that out to everyone else who's not here today. K500 is check all that apply. So, and then you always have the option of Z, which is that none that applies, so you can check the IV fluids and a mechanically altered diet, and it may be therapeutic as well, just depending on what's going on with your resident. All right, so let's look at a couple of scenarios here, and I think I kind of alluded to one of them already. But so Mrs. H is receiving antibiotics, and she is receiving 100 cc's of normal saline, and she has a urinary tract infection, she has fever, she has abnormal lab results, she has new pyrrhea, she has greater than 100,000 colony-forming units in her urine culture. She has documented inadequate fluid intake, and she has signs and symptoms starting of dehydration. Again, your clinical assessment for this particular resident. In this particular situation, the nursing home has placed her on a hydration plan to ensure adequate hydration. So we're not just relying on the extra fluid she's getting from the IVs. We're encouraging, we're offering her favorite fluids, we're doing it frequently in small volume maybe for this particular resident. And documentation shows that IV fluids are being administered as part of the already identified need for additional hydration. So how would we code 500 here? For this particular resident, you don't have a whole lot of other information on what else she's doing, but we certainly would code K500A, right? It was clear. You had no question, right? Okay. So it's good supporting documentation. Here you have your other scenario, kind of the other side of the spectrum. Mr. J is receiving an antibiotic. He has a UTI. Okay, so we're starting off the same, but he has no fever. He has documented adequate fluid intake. He is placed in the nursing home's hydration plan to ensure adequate hydration. What would you code him? Would you code 500A for him? No. He wasn't clinically indicated that he really needed those additional fluids. So that's how we want you to code this particular item. All right, let's go to K700. So when are we going to code this item? This is not a whole lot different than what we did in 2.0. So complete this item only if 500A or B is triggered, right? So only if the person received parental or IV feedings or they got a feeding tube. Otherwise, we're going to ignore this particular question. Or we're going to code it as none of the above, I should say. So we're going to review the intake records, and we're going to look at what they actually took in. We're going to do the calculation of the total calories in. If the resident took no food or fluids by mouth or took just sips of fluids, we need to stop there. And if the resident had more substantial oral intake than this, consult with your dietitian for some help. Here we're going. We're giving you some examples. Why? Because these are the training materials that hopefully you're going to bring back to your facilities or your organizations and train. Again, we want to make sure that all of the staff who are going to be filling out the MDS or the nurses on the units who need to know this understand how to do this calculation. So for this particular person, they had 15,000 cc's in with the tube feed and 2,450 calories. So we look at the total calories here of 17,450, and then we're going to divide them. Again, you can do the math differently, but in this particular situation, they have 85.9% of the calories were taken in. So select the best response. We would code 3 if the resident took no food or fluids by mouth or took just sips of fluids. Here we're looking at the percentage that the resident took in. And so here we would say that the resident took in 51% or more of their calories for that particular example. For 700B, tube feedings, we're looking at the amount that the resident has taken in. In this particular situation, again, we're looking at the past 7 days. We're going to add the total amount of fluids received each day by IV or tube feeding. We're going to divide it by the 7 days, and then we're going to look at what the average is. So code the average number of cc's of fluid. Record what actually was received by the resident. Here's a big thing, both for tube feeding and for IVs. you know, inevitably something happens and the 2 feet get stopped, make sure you're calculating not what was ordered, but what the resident actually received. So it's important. We found that in the Dave 2, where we went out and an MDS person was sitting in the office filling this out based off of what was ordered and didn't know actually what the resident, that something had happened and the resident actually had it stopped for a certain amount of hours and then for that particular time frame did not receive what was ordered. So we need to calculate actually what was received. Code 1, 500 cc a day or less, or 501. So a very quick scenario. A resident has swallowing difficulty secondary to Huntington's disease. She's able to take oral fluids by mouth with supervision, but not enough to maintain her hydration. She receives daily fluid by supplemental tube feed, and she gets water plus a nutritional supplement and juices. And this all happened during the last 7 days. Here we have her calculation. She had 6,300 cc's of fluid divided by 7 days. Her daily average is 900 cc's per day. So we would code that as 2. The person got 501 cc's or more a day. That makes sense? That's easy, right? Okay. Here's a little bit one that the people have struggled a little bit more with. So during a 7-day period, Mrs. G received a 1 liter of IV fluids during the assessment period. Just a 1 liter. That's all she had, okay? And she received no other intake via an IV or a tube feed during the assessment period. But we want to capture, we want to look at that liter. So how do we do that calculation? Well, here it shows you how to do the calculation. That Tuesday, she had the 1,000 cc's. We look at the rest of the days, none of them tube feed or IVs. So the total for the 7-day period was 1,000. We divide it by 7, and we get 142.9 cc's per day. So we'd have to code that as 1, 500 cc's a day or less. You see how you can still capture even just a liter of fluid that someone had? All right. So that's the end for Section K, and I think we're on time. I don't know where Jennifer is.